We'll hear argument now on number 86-6124, George S. Bennett versus Arkansas. Mr. Carpenter, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. The issue before the Court today is whether a federal statute that precludes attachment of Social Security benefits bars a state's attempt to attach those benefits in order to reimburse itself for providing care and maintaining a prisoner in custody. Mr. Bennett, the petitioner, believes that pursuant to the Supremacy Clause in Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution, the federal statute prevails. To that end, Mr. Bennett urges this Court to reverse the decision of the Arkansas Supreme Court to the contrary. The factual matter is that Mr. Bennett is a 69-year-old Social Security pensioner. He received retirement benefits because he worked sufficient quarters to be eligible for those benefits. He was serving a term of 21 years in the Arkansas Department of Correction on a conviction for murder in the second degree. While he was in the Department of Correction, he began drawing these benefits at approximately the rate of $282 per month. Suit in 1981, the state of Arkansas passed a state reimbursement statute, which is Act 715. The Act became effective in June of 1981. In January of 1983, the state filed suit against Mr. Bennett and two other petitioners asking that they be forced to reimburse the state for their cost of care. In April of 1983, the Congress passed a statute that cut off benefits to prisoners entirely. In November of 83, there was a consolidated answer by the parties. Briefs were filed in 1984. In December of 1984, prior to the case finally being decided, but after the Court had entered an order seizing these funds, Mr. Bennett was released from incarceration. Judgment came down in 1985, and then the judgment ordered that the monies continued to be held pending outcome of any litigation. Specifically raised in the trial court was the question of whether under the Supremacy Clause, the federal exemption statute for Social Security benefits preempted the state reimbursement statute.
Mr. Carpenter, now, is there any money at issue here that would be governed by the passage of the 1983 amendments?
Yes, Your Honor. There was approximately someplace between $1,000 and $1,800 pre-1983. There is approximately an equal amount after the 1983 statutes. However, Mr. Bennett's monies were treated as an overpayment by the Social Security Department. Those monies had been returned to the Social Security through withholding of his future payments, which began again upon his release in December of 1984.
So if you prevail, he will get reimbursed eventually. Is that what
yes,
will happen?
Yes, right. He will.
And is Petitioner Shelton a party now?
No, Your Honor. Petitioner Shelton would never complete an affidavit of indigency during the course of the litigation. He was released, and I lost all contact with him afterwards.
So he's not before us at all, and all we have is a case involving reimbursement to a prison with Social Security benefits. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. That's the issue before the Court today.
I guess I still don't understand. Will he get money, or are you challenging the post-1983 money as well?
I am at this time, Your Honor, for this reason. The money collected from May 1983 until his release in December of 1984 were Social Security benefits. He was ineligible for them, but rather than treat them in any other way, Social Security treated it merely as an overpayment. When he became eligible again for Social Security payments in January of 1985 after his release, the Social Security Department attached his future payments. So all the monies being held now really are Social Security monies that Mr. Bennett should have received personally at one time or another.
Well, no, post-May 83, he shouldn't have received it. It seems to me your complaint is that the state should not have taken them. I mean, if
that's right.
And therefore, there should be no overpayment charged against his future payments, right? You're saying the state should return the overpayment rather than his returning the overpayment.
That's right. Sure.
But you're not saying he was entitled to any money after 1983. You're just saying he shouldn't be charged after he was released for payments which he never received post-1983.
Your Honor, I'm not sure that I've made myself clear. He continued to receive payments from May 83 to December of 84 because Social Security did not cut them off like they should have.
Right.
That was treated as an overpayment from Social Security to Mr. Bennett. Mr. Bennett was eligible again for benefits when he was released. Social Security recouped this overpayment from him by deducting the money from future payments. I do not contend that the money should go from the prison to Social Security. I contend upon release they should go from the prison to Mr. Bennett because they are his monies now.
What should go to him is not the money between May of 83 and the time he was released. That's not what should go to him. What you're really asking for is the money that should have gone to him after his release. You're saying there shouldn't have been any charge against that money. You don't claim any entitlement on his part to money between May of 83 and the time he was released. You do not claim he was entitled to any money then, do you?
Not on the basis of the statute, no, Your Honor.
What will happen if monetarily, if this court reverses the judgment of the Supreme Court of Arkansas, what will Mr. Bennett get?
He will get $3,600, which is currently being held, and under the judgment, he will get the interest that's been accruing on that money since the date of the judgment.
And if we affirm the judgment of the Supreme Court of Arkansas, the state of Arkansas will get that $3,600.
Plus the interest.
Okay.
The supremacy clause is called into question in this particular case because there's a clear conflict in the text of the state reimbursement statute with the federal preemption statute. The federal preemption statute holds that the entitlement to payments at the present or in the future are not subject to levy, attachment, garnishment, or other legal process. Yet the state reimbursement statute expressly defines the estate of a prisoner to include Social Security benefits. Now, when you have a direct conflict between a federal statute and a state statute, as is present in this case, this court has consistently held that the federal statute must fall under the Supremacy Clause argument. The Arkansas Supreme Court has never recognized or has never articulated the fact that there is a direct conflict between the state statute and the federal statute. Instead, the Arkansas Supreme Court suggested that it could ignore the plain textual conflict and move into a determination as to whether the purpose of the federal statute met the purpose of the state statute. It's our contention, first, that that was an inappropriate thing to do and that the case should have stopped at the recognition of the clear conflict in the language. However, even if we go to the second step and get into the purpose of the particular statutes, it's clear that the Arkansas Supreme Court did not correctly decide this issue. The purpose of Social Security statutes is to provide benefits to beneficiaries who have qualified for them. In the retirement sense, it is effectively an annuity-type contract. You make forced payments from your payroll, and in exchange, you are guaranteed payments at the end. But Congress recognized at the time that it passed this that it had the right to take these benefits away entirely. It could at any moment, with the stroke of a pen, say Social Security is no longer available to the citizens of the United States. And partly for that reason, as this Court recognized in Hisquierdo, in a different type of benefit but the same type of statute, the vulnerability of these particular benefits is such that the Court is unwilling to let these benefits, or the Congress is unwilling to let these benefits, be subject to attachment by any type of creditor. That's an important point here because it raises, I think, the missed rationale in the Supreme Court of Arkansas. The purpose of Social Security is to provide for the benefit, the care and benefit and maintenance of the individual. But the purpose of the exemption statute is to assure that these benefits are not subjected to creditors. And that purpose is in conflict with the reimbursement statute that the state has passed because the state is merely a creditor trying to be repaid for providing care and maintenance to these individuals. The cost of care is defined as food, clothing, medical care, and normal living expenses. However, the reimbursement statute goes further. It permits cost of care to include other things because it discusses it in terms of per capita basis later on in the statute, which can mean the cost of providing guards, which is not a Social Security purpose. It also provides in the statute that if there is some sort of contempt citation involved, then the cost of that can be taken from these monies, which is not a Social Security purpose. It also provides that the cost of investigation to find out if the individual has these funds in the first place is the type of cost that can be reimbursed, and that is not a Social Security purpose. The key to the matter is that neither on the face of the language or the purpose behind the particular statutes are the Arkansas statutes and the federal exemption statute reconcilable. They're in clear conflict. Now, the reason we have our form of government is because we had to recognize at some point the federal government must prevail. And for that reason, we have a supremacy clause in our Constitution. And this is a prime example as to why the statute in Arkansas must fall to the extent that it permits attachment of these federal benefits. We would like to conclude with this short note. If the case is reversed, this is merely another case in a long line of cases on supremacy clause litigation, and at most would be a case note in our constitutional law textbooks. But if the case is affirmed, it becomes a dagger with which to shred the fabric that's protected the federal-state relationship since our country was founded 200 years ago. And then it becomes a chapter in our con law textbooks and a very dangerous step towards ruining federalism. If I may reserve the balance of my time for any rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. We'll hear now from you, Mr. Lazarus.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. What Arkansas seeks to accomplish here is the very thing barred by Section 207 of the Social Security Act, the attachment and seizure of Social Security benefits. The textual conflict, in our view, is head-on. There is no ambiguity in either the federal or the state law. Section 207 provides that Social Security benefits shall not be subject to attachment or other legal process. But that is precisely what Arkansas sought in its complaint, what was ordered by the trial court, and what was held to be permissible by the Arkansas Supreme Court. Contrary to Arkansas's claim, Section 207 contains no implied exemption for a state that is seeking reimbursement for costs it incurred in providing for another individual's basic needs. This court's decision, we believe, in Philpott v. Essex County Welfare Board settled that issue. The court concluded there that it saw, quote, no reason why a state performing its statutory duty to take care of the needy should be in a preferred position as compared to any other creditor. The court expressly or necessarily rejected practically all of the limiting principles upon which respondent relies in this case. No exception to Section 207 was found for state creditors, for creditors who provide basic needs, including those obliged by state law to do so, or for creditors whose debtors did not need the federal monies to meet their basic needs. No meaningful distinction exists between this case and Philpott. The only difference between the two cases is that here the state was performing its statutory duty to take care of the imprisoned rather than its statutory duty to take care of the financially needy. It is a difference of no legal significance in the context of Section 207. There is no more reason to place the state outside the scope of the anti-attachment provision. Indeed, the state's claim in Philpott, to a certain extent, was arguably stronger than in this case because there, unlike here, the individual expressly agreed in advance to reimburse the state and, at the state's behest, had applied for Social Security benefits, presumably to that end. Respondent in certain lower courts suggest one other possible ground for distinction. They argue that Section 207 does not apply to claims against an individual's estate when the claimant has legal custody of the individual. The statutory language, however, makes no such distinction. It does not deprive one in legal custody of its federal right under Section 207 control the disbursement of his Social Security benefits. We do not deny that certain equities favor the state's position in this case. Section 207, however, does not call for or allow for a balancing of the equities. To the extent that any inequity exists, an application of 207, only Congress can revisit the issue. In fact, Congress has done so to a limited extent, but Congress did not choose Arkansas's preferred solution. Congress determined instead that to the extent that inequity is presented when the individual is in a penal institution, that the correct answer is that the federal government and not the states will get the money. Congress did not lift the anti-assignment bar. Congress instead concluded that incarcerated felons should not receive their Social Security benefits in the first instance. Finally, this Court's decision last term in Rose v. Rose does not suggest otherwise. Rose, which, unlike this case, involved a preemption challenge to state family law, did not purport to question at all the court's decision in Philpott. The court simply concluded that a similarly worded anti-attachment provision regarding veterans' disability benefits was not implicated by a claim for child support because Congress had intended that the children of veterans, too, should receive those benefits. There is no comparable expression of congressional intent that state penal institutions should receive the federal monies. The financial claims of the state penal institutions, therefore, are not comparable to the claims of the children in Rose. Arkansas, therefore, may charge a prisoner for the cost of his care. It may, of course, generally use legal process against the prisoner's estate to recover those charges. But federal Social Security benefits are simply out of bounds. They are immune from such legal process. Congress could have made an exception for state institutional care. Policy distinctions, we agree, do exist. In other contexts, Congress has chosen to make specific exceptions to the anti-assignment provision for this reason. But Congress has not done so here. In our view, that is simply the end of the matter. One other final point, in answer to a question posed by Justice O'Connor and Justice Scalia, with respect to the overpayment made here, it is the government's view that Mr. Bennett is currently entitled to the money in the bank account. After he was released from prison in December 84, HHS discovered in January 85 that he had wrongly received benefits while in prison. HHS proceeded to recoup payments prospectively from payments he was then entitled to for retirement benefits up until, I think, June of 1986. At that time, HHS concluded that he had paid back everything that he had been overpaid. HHS subsequently concluded in July of 86, about a year later, from June of 85, that he had not yet paid back all that he had been overpaid before. HHS notified Mr. Bennett in September of 86, proceeded to recoup again. In October of 86, after receiving a protest and a request for a waiver from Mr. Bennett under Section 404B of the Social Security Act, a waiver of overpayment, HHS decided to waive recoupment of the rest of the overpayment. If there are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lazarus. We'll hear now from you, General Clark.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I submit to this Court that this case is a rather simple one in the sense that the Congress, in enacting the Social Security Administration Act with retirement benefits, said that its purpose was to provide for the food, clothing, and necessary shelter of people who were approaching advancing age and not to have them experience the rigors of poverty. The Arkansas statute adopted in 1981 really, in a very direct respect, had that same purpose. It was furtherance of a logical, penological purpose and goal for our state that was to see that felons, those guilty of felonious conduct, could not get windfall benefits by virtue of the fact that while they were being taken care of, their total care and maintenance being provided by the state, that, in fact, while that occurred, that they should not receive any windfall benefits and that those benefits should be applied in the nature and the form of a reimbursement if, in fact, what Arkansas was doing was what the Congress intended to have done with those retirement benefits. I submit to you that's what happened in this case with Petitioner Bennett. Petitioner Bennett, as you've been told, committed second-degree murder and was sentenced to 21 years in our institution. In 1982, he turned 62. He voluntarily, without any compulsion from our state, applied for retirement benefits. We adopted a statute in 1981, recognizing what we thought was a bad public policy of permitting such windfalls. In 1983, Arkansas, acting as I submit to you that a state has the power to act, decided to try to recoup from Petitioner Bennett $4,000 that he had in terms of assets, in contrast to some $27,000 that we had spent for his cost of incarceration. Our statute specifically says this: reimbursement costs for food, clothing, shelter, medical, and normal living expense to the per capita amount that has been expended on that person incarcerated in just a correctional facility. It does not permit us to collect above that amount. In the instance of Petitioner Bennett, had he left our institution with $35,000 and we had been able to collect $27,000, he would have had an $8,000 check presented to him at the time of his departure. It goes to exactly the amount that we, in fact, expend as a per capita cost, which I submit to this Court is consistent with what the Congress came back around to do in 1983, when the Congress said in its amendments to the Social Security Act as to retirement benefits that, in fact, that is a windfall, and that windfall should not occur. Since that time, as you know, the Congress has made sure that those benefits do not flow. In the instance of Petitioner Bennett, there was a mistake made by the Social Security Administration and by the state of Arkansas. We stand ready here to tell this court we'll rectify that mistake if there's been any overpayment collected by us to which we owe the Social Security Administration. In fact, until these briefs were filed with the court, we simply were not aware of that. I should tell you, the state was not. But we stand ready to say that if there's been an overpayment and we've gotten a windfall benefit, it's our responsibility then to make the Social Security Administration whole.
And since the 1983 amendments, you concede that the state can't get any recoupment or take any portion of the benefits?
For retirement benefits, yes, Your Honor. I can see we cannot recoup from Social Security retirement benefits. In fact, there is a department memo that says any Social Security retirement checks that are received by the department are to be returned to the Social Security Administration. We only have 45 inmates in our system, Your Honor, who are over the age of 62 at this point. Our median age is about 28 years in our correctional system.
I'm glad to hear what you've just said, General Clark, because I couldn't see why this amount should be in dispute at all. It seems to me pretty cut and dried.
Your Honor, I think it is very cut and dried.
Now, as to the rest of it, suppose my elderly parents live with me and I provide all their food and lodging, would I be able to obtain their a right to their Social Security payments?
No, Your Honor, I think not.
Now, why is that?
I think the difference in the hypothetical you've offered and what we have in this case is that you've done that by a matter of choice. On the Arkansas statutory scheme, we have an obligation to provide that food, care, shelter, normal living expenses, and medical expenses to an inmate in our system. But even if we chose as a state policy to repeal that mandatory statutory scheme, we have a constitutional responsibility. The district courts of these United States have repeatedly told us, and a lot of litigation, some of which has come to this court called Hutto v. Finney, what that responsibility is constitutionally under the Eighth Amendment, the 14th Amendment, and how it's applied in terms of that total care and maintenance. So I think you can distinguish, and there's a distinction in the hypothetical, in the sense that in yours, Your Honor, you have voluntarily accepted that responsibility. In ours, it is an obligation that's constitutionally mandated to which we must live up to.
Suppose I have obligations under state law to support my spouse, and my wife becomes old and unable to take care of herself, and I fulfill that obligation.
I still
provide think her room, lodging, and food, and everything. Am I then entitled to get the Social Security payment because I have an obligation to support her?
No, Your Honor, I think not. I think again the distinction in this case is that, in the instance of Petitioner Bennett, when he voluntarily committed a criminal act and became a part of our system, we had a constitutional responsibility. We stood in his place in the instance that what we did was fulfill the intent of Congress in a very narrow window of time, from June of 81 to May of 83. In fact, there were only two cases of Social Security retirement benefits which the state attempted to attach in that period of time, and only in the instance of a person incarcerated in a penal facility in my state. The statute does not go beyond that.
Really, all you show so far, it seems to me, General Clark, is that perhaps if Congress had thought about this, it would have said that Arkansas's situation would be an exception to the anti-assignment statute. But you've got the flat language of the anti-assignment statute.
I think, Your Honor, when you look at the plain language, you have to look at the test that I think is specifically identified in the Solicitor General's brief, which says that you look at that our case is not barred, our statute is not deemed to be unconstitutional because you look at the language and the purpose to formulate the intent. It's language plus that gets to what the intent was. Congress...
But really, the spoken word, the language, if it's clear, that doesn't leave a whole lot of room for something else.
Well, Your Honor, this court in Rose v. Rose could have taken that very same approach but did not. This court could have said, the plain language says no levy, no attachment. You can't do that. This court didn't say that. This court said, well, wait a minute, there's a legitimate purpose being advanced. That is, the state has the power and the duty to advance laws concerning domestic relations. I submit to you that that's the same in the area of corrections and criminal law, that the state of Arkansas in 1981 had legitimate power and authority to advance a purpose, to say that it was wrong for a felon to be the windfall beneficiary of his criminal acts. And in that instance, we adopted a statute that in its application applied to the estate of those persons incarcerated for their tangible and intangible benefits or assets to include Social Security. After those 83 amendments, we specifically said you cannot or you no longer can stand in the place of that recipient, because what we had done prior to that was simply say we were doing what the congressional intent was from the beginning. We were giving the total care and maintenance for this individual. In fact, frankly, we did more than that. But that's not the test. The test is, were we doing what the Congress wanted done? And I submit to you that we did, and we constitutionally could do that in terms of defining our own roles and purpose for criminal law and corrections. This case is one in which I submit to you that it's nothing more than the traditional role of the state acting in an area where the state has the power to act, because our state formed this policy with this purpose. If you're going to commit a felonious act and you're going to, because of that, become a burden to the state and its taxpayers, they should not have to suffer that burden if, in fact, they fulfill what was, in this small window of time, the intent of Congress in providing for these total care and maintenance of these inmates. This policy adopted by Arkansas was consistent with the later amendments. And you might say, to some degree, we're just 24 months ahead of our time. The Congress came back and said, you're right, this is a windfall, it is wrong. So in this small window, the
Congress also said, you're wrong in thinking you get it, we get it.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. That is correct, and the Congress had that power, and they did say the state should not receive it, that should stay in the Social Security Trust Fund. I admit that readily. But what I would also say to you is that the Congress didn't prohibit that prior to the 83 amendments. When they came back in 83, they got very specific. No longer will the retirement benefits flow. No longer. Disability, they will only flow if, in fact, the person who is to receive the disability benefit has these things that will occur. One, the program was specifically approved by the court. Two, that the person would get training that when they were released would give them gainful employment. It was not the 62-year-old person we were talking about, the 35-year-old person we were talking about. And three, the Congress said that in the instance you have to have a reasonable opportunity to be released shortly, so in fact this training will benefit you. Congress was very explicit, but prior to those 83 amendments, congressional intent, I think, was not frustrated at all by the Arkansas statute, at all. In fact, I would say to this court that this case is distinguished from Philpott, and in the instance that in Philpott there was a voluntary duty and one that was conditioned. Our response is not conditioned. In the Philpott case, you found with that statute that the person who received the benefits at the time the benefits were granted were told, upon this condition, you shall receive. That's not what our statute says. Statutorily in terms of corrections, or that's not what the courts of these United States have taught us about corrections in terms of care and maintenance of inmates. It's not upon a condition that you happen to be under 35, you'll get this sort of treatment, or over 62, that sort of treatment. It is, in fact, you will get. It is an obligation, statutorily and constitutionally founded. And so I think this case is distinguished, can be distinguished from Philpott. I also would simply say to the court that in looking at this case, that the petitioner would have you believe that it should be disposed of very easily by just looking at that plain language, and that there really isn't a case at bar here today. And yet I submit that's not correct. That's not the test this court articulated in Rose v. Rose. That's really not the test that this SG's brief even says it is. It says, and I quote, it's equally clear the validity of a challenged state law turns on, one, its consistency with congressional language, but two, its purpose. The Arkansas state statute from 1981 to 1983 did not frustrate congressional purpose. And as in the case of Rose v. Rose, if you just stop and say levy attached, so on and so forth, we can't go any further, we would be precluded by a supremacy clause. But this court didn't do that in Rose v. Rose. This court said, wait a minute, there is a legitimate state purpose advance, and I say again, I submit that that's what we were doing with that statute. Our statute is broader than just Social Security retirement benefits. It has been applied in some 35 instances, and in all those, only two, which Social Security retirement benefits included. Many of the people, not many, 35 out of 3,100, let's get the numbers very specific, 35 out of 3,100 inmates have some value which we thought we could be reimbursed from. The procedure is very simple in Arkansas. When you are sentenced to the Arkansas Department of Corrections, you spend 14 days in processing. We hand you a sheet of paper. We ask you to fill out the information sheet. It says, do you have any assets? If you say none, that's the end of it. We don't have the staff or the manpower to go looking any further. If in the instance of while you're incarcerated, we seek reimbursement for $4,000 and then you are released as Petitioner Bennett, we don't come back with a deficiency claim. We're not a judgment creditor. We don't do this by choice. We do it by obligation. In the instance of Mr. Bennett, if he has a great aunt who dies and leaves him $5 million, we don't come back again. We simply say during the period of the time that you were incarcerated in our institution, You should not be a burden to the taxpayer in the instance if you have resource which we have a right to be reimbursed to, up to the per capita cost of what we expend keeping you there because of your conduct which mandated you be there. I finally would simply say this to the Court, that the Arkansas reimbursement statute doesn't frustrate any purpose or intent of Congress, and that, in fact, we really fulfill that purpose. And we have not created any sort of hardship. We have not created direct challenge to federal authority. Our statute does not pose a serious threat to federalism. That's not our statute at all. And because of that, I would ask that the decision of the Court below be affirmed.
Thank you, General Clark. Mr. Carpenter, you have 10 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. I don't know how General Clark can say he imposes no hardship. George Bennett's a 69-year-old man that can't get a job and had to leave the Department of Correction without the $1,800, which would have been a great benefit to him in providing for his care and maintenance when he left. And had he not had family members to go and live with at that particular time, he would have been destitute. So I think it does pose a hardship. The fact that the state of Arkansas doesn't at this time seem to attach Social Security and has some memorandum out is no future guarantee that it's not going to make the effort again. And it's important for this Court to rule that that effort cannot be made. The respondent is suggesting essentially that there should be a new type of exemption under 42 U.S.C. 407 or Section 207 of the Code, and this is for those that are constitutionally mandated to provide for care. Yet the Congress has never said that those that are constitutionally mandated to provide care to individuals are exempt from our attachment statutes. And Congress certainly has the ability to do that. When Congress was posed the question, for example, in other types of retirement benefits as to whether people that committed certain types of crimes, mostly treason-type crimes, are entitled to these benefits anyway, Congress very quickly said no. When Congress was given opportunities to deal with different situations, they set up guidelines. When Congress needed to figure out a way to set up alternate payees, it did so, and then it directed the Secretary to do the regulations to do so, and the Secretary did that. Everything we've heard from the state is essentially a policy argument. The state is trying to say our policy meets your policy, and therefore it's good policy. But the relative importance of a state's own suggestion or own law is not material, and this Court has so held, when it conflicts with a federal law. The Court said that first in 1962 in Free v. Bland, and it has reiterated that several times, most recently in Hisquierdo. We would note, and I would like to paraphrase, if I may, a very apt statement from the Louisiana Public Service Commission case versus Federal Communications Commission, and this is a paraphrase. A state may not confer power upon itself. To permit a state to expand its power in the face of congressional limitation would be to grant to the states the power to override Congress. This the Court should be unwilling to do. Rose v. Rose dealt with family law situations and followed a long line of cases that had looked closely to the family law situation. The Arkansas Department of Correction can in no way be equated with George Bennett's family, particularly when it left him at the door with a departure allowance and said, go home, we're going to hold your money. The Arkansas legislature also passed an act that entitled it to take monies from the families of policemen killed in the line of duty because it met with a good state purpose on workers' comp. And this Court summarily reversed in Rose versus Arkansas State Police. We ask the Court to follow that rule and reverse and let it be known that the exemption statute means these funds cannot be attached and states cannot declare that there is a purpose that meets the congressional purpose. Only the Congress can decide that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument next to number 8.